from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, ESPN 97.5 and 92.5 proudly present The Killer Bees.
Definitely a fan of The Killer Bees.
Now bringing you the fastest 3 hours in Houston sports radio, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Ooh, what up, H-Town? Hey, how we doing?
The Giants, 7-2. They get the win over Houston, 24-16.
Young over the middle, touchdown, Latu.
Derek Watt puts the game away, that'll do it. The Steelers are going to come away with a win out of the bye.
C.J. Stroud looking, guns it, in the end zone, touchdown, Emeka Abuka.
Jamal Williams gets the first down, and Dan Campbell gets his first road win as head coach.
The one-yard line, Levis surges ahead. And that's a Kentucky touchdown.
Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. A Monday edition. He's Blank on Branham. Brendan behind the glass. Boy, what a great weekend for the Houston Texans. Texans lose. You have the Panthers win on Thursday. The Lions leave the land of two-win teams. The Steelers leave the land of two-win teams. What a great
Browns
NFL
lost.
Week. For the Houston, for the Browns loss, how can I forget
add
the Browns
that.
Losing too?
That.
This
there
was a great
on
weekend.
Thursday?
Yeah, the Panthers mentioned that one.
We There's, mentioned that one. Yeah,
this was as good a weekend as you can have for the Houston Texans. This is why you should have the mindset of April 27th when you're watching the Houston Texans. April 27th should always be on the forefront of your mind when you're watching other games around the NFL. April 27th should be on your mind when you're watching college football games on Saturday.
It is, and it continues to be more and more if you watch Twitter while watching college football.
Absolutely.
Everybody is starting to hint around about who the Texans should be drafting next year.
April 27th, Blankers alluded to it, that is the first round of the 2023 NFL draft. For the Houston Texans, that is the light at the end of the tunnel. Well, maybe not so much, but that is the day that everybody has to look forward to. That is the hopeful day that everybody has. Because right now, the Texans, 2022, they're hopeless. It's fair to say, right?
Fair.
The Texans are hopeless. 713-780-ESPN if you disagree, and I would love for you to disagree with that. April 27th brings hope. Why? Because you have two first-round draft picks. Who knows where the Browns are going to end up. They're going to get Deshaun Watson back in a couple of weeks, which we can't wait for that, see what he looks like coming into Houston. But right now, the Houston Texans, number one pick in the NFL draft. There's some quarterbacks that would be intriguing at the top of the draft. There's some best available guys that aren't even quarterbacks that would be intriguing at the top of the draft. But watching the Texans from that perspective, watching the NFL from that perspective, watching college football from that perspective, you would enjoy your football weekend so much more.
It makes it so much more entertaining because if you're at a sports bar or you have the Sunday ticket or from college football with all the games on all the channels, you have more motivation. It's like when you gamble because you make the most uninteresting games more interesting. You can now know that even though your team sucks and they're getting a bear hug of embracement to suck, that you can look around the league and you can follow plenty of other teams and games and go, I like that, I like that, I like that. Ooh, college football, ooh, he can play. Ooh, I wouldn't mind seeing him in a Texans uniform. This makes everything more interesting for you. So there is a way to salvage your Saturdays and Sundays even when your football team is already irrelevant.
Yeah, you can make it enjoyable as well. The last time that a team with four wins picked number one was 2003. Only 11 teams are in that race. Because, I don't think the Texans are getting to four wins, but maybe the Raiders lose out and you win a couple of games, you get to three wins, Raiders are picking ahead of you. But I think we can start the countdown. I think we can start crossing some teams off the list when you talk about teams with the chances of having the number one overall pick. And there was a few of them that we talked about there. That got to the four-win mark that I think you can cross off their name at the top of the NFL draft. The Colts, they picked up win number four. Go ahead and cross them off. Green Bay, they picked up win number four. I don't think we were ever talking about them really in that mix, but cross them off. Arizona behind Colt McCoy. Hook them, just kidding. They just picked up their fourth win. Cross them off. If you look around the landscape of the NFL, what is it, 11 teams right now have three wins or less. So I think that you can eliminate the other 19. The other 21. 21 teams have been eliminated for the contention of being the number one pick on April 27th to kick off the 2023 NFL draft. There is 11 left that have fewer than four wins. And right now, I think watching football on Sunday, you're rooting for these teams to get to four. The Browns, you have their pick, so you really want them to lose. But Denver, Pittsburgh, Jacksonville, Vegas, Detroit, the Rams, Carolina, the Saints, Chicago, you want them to start winning games so you can separate yourself, the Houston Texans in this case, from everybody else in the NFL.
Yeah, no, look, I think it makes it a lot. I'm doing it. I found myself doing it. You can do it, too. There is a way to find hope and make it spring eternal across college football, across pro football. You watch the games of the teams that you're talking about. You can't sit there realistically watching this Texans team week in, week out. And we can get into Davis Mills. But overall, just as a team, as a roster, as the way they're playing football right now, and think that there's even a sliver of hope for this season. You just have to take it for what it's worth and then start analyzing talent individually. But I know that kind of sucks. So to uplift your spirits, you realize that, you know what, the light at the end of the tunnel isn't a train coming to run your ass over, that there are bright spots ahead, and you have multiple picks, and you have the opportunity to get better fairly quickly. And you follow that, and then you know that those picks can be even higher if the Browns lose. If, you know, you're keeping track of who's close to you, because unlike the NBA draft, if you finish dead last, you get the number one pick. There is no lottery. So you keep objects in your rearview mirror are important. The Lions have slid back. Some of the other teams you mentioned have slid back. They're a couple of lanes back on the highway. But the Raiders are on your bumper now, and they look like they might be in full implosion mode. So that's the next team you watch, too. But you have enjoyment when they lose. So you can find ways to enjoy your football.
Yeah, and I think that's where we are as a fan base, too. Like, we're going to watch every down that the Texans play because, you know, it's kind of our jobs. And we want to see, you know, what Davis Mills looks like for the entirety of the season. People were talking about benching him yesterday, which is like, why? What's the point of benching him? But you want to see how the rookies start to develop. How many players could be potentially in the long-term plans of the Houston Texans? So there's reasons to obviously watch the games. You're going to do that. You're going to see who has talent, who you want to stick around, things like that. Where's the coaching staff? You know, what do you feel about them, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But when it comes to the storylines of the Houston Texans, those are long gone. Like this whole, like, oh, the Texans got to play better. I think that that's long gone. Oh, you can't be jumping on 2nd and 10 from the 25-yard line. I think that that kind of talk is long gone. I think you reserve that kind of talk at this time of year, middle of November, for teams who are in playoff contention. It's for everybody else in the NFL who has a shot to make the playoffs. You have those conversations. That's how you discuss Monday reaction, right? Mm-hmm. You're like, oh, okay, well, how can the Texans get better from here? Whenever you're 1-7-1, you're not going to be doing that. You're not going to sit here and break down the play of Brandon Cooks. You're not going to sit down and break down the play of Christian Harris, who actually looked pretty good, played every single defensive snap yesterday, by the way. So there's some promising things about the Houston Texans. But to me, it's the big picture when it comes to this organization. And that's where people are, too. I put out this little I put together like this mock draft earlier today, and I literally took the sexiest name available, offensive name, like Bryce Young. I took like two running backs, just having like being silly about it. And I posted that, and it went nuts. Like, people are crazy right now about the future of the Houston Texans. Houston Texans fans, by a majority, care way more about April 27th than they do this week's game about the Washington football team. So I think you have to take a big picture view when you're looking at a rebuilding team that's 1-7-1 through their first 9 games in 2022.
But you know what, Jeremy? Here's the thing. When you talk about that, we know we have a fairly intelligent fan base. So at least they understand the big picture, right? Because the thing that we fought early in the year was the only big picture they wanted to talk about was that their franchise quarterback was already on the roster, and that's all we needed to do was see him play more, and we need to slow down. But now they understand that the big picture is this team is bad, but it can get better if it continues to follow the program. And if it follows the program and it has all the assets that they have, including but not limited to the draft, they also have money that they can spend in free agency, they can get better rather quickly and stay on this progression. But there were too many people too quickly to say, especially from when the Vegas odds came out to when we started talking about Davis Mills, this could be a sleeper playoff team this year. This team could win this year. I don't know what kind of crack they were smoking, but my God, I think that the buzz finally wore off.
I was thinking about this, too, from like a Pep Hamilton point of view, because Pep Hamilton's getting dragged right now, which, I mean, their offense is abysmal. And when the offenses are abysmal, usually you're going to put blame on the offensive coordinator. I think Pep Hamilton, in a lot of ways, is playing chess with pawns while everybody else has the full board. You know what I mean? we were the first ones, too, like in the offseason, being like, hey, we might want to pump the brakes on Pep Hamilton. Like, Pep Hamilton's not Sean McVay. Pep Hamilton's not Kyle Shanahan. Pep Hamilton isn't going to have the top offense in football. And I think you can point back to his OC days with the Colts, where he was pretty good for 2 years and then literally got fired in the middle of the season in the third year that he was an offensive coordinator. Anybody that thought Pep Hamilton was going to be the savior of this offense was kidding themselves. But it was going on. Like, Pep Hamilton's going to fix the Houston Texans. Pep Hamilton with Davis Mills is going to have the Texans playing, you know, inspired football, and they're going to be in games because their offense is good. Davis Mills, the potential, blah, 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 blah. Pep Hamilton has been getting dragged. Pep Hamilton doesn't have a chance with this roster. Like, look around the NFL and just look at random teams and the weapons that they have offensively. Seattle. Like, Seattle has Geno Smith, who we didn't think much of Geno Smith, right. Rightfully so. He's kind of been a journeyman in the NFL, has surprised and has been really good this season. Even Seattle, look at the offensive weapons. They have DK Metcalf. They have Tyler Lockett. They have Kenneth Walker. Like, look around any team in the NFL. Take random team in the NFL, compare their offensive skill players to the Houston Texans' offensive skill players, and how in the world did you think the Houston Texans were going to be capable offensively?
Even tight ends, right? Even tight ends. When you look across the...
They're brutal.
Yeah. The Texans' tight ends are horrible, but the other teams that you're talking about, even when we thought that they were going to suck, even when we thought at the start of the year, the Giants and you mentioned Seattle, but everybody thought Seattle and the Giants would be rivaling the Texans along with the Lions.
Mm-hmm.
Well, guess what? They had Saquon Barkley
and
Daniel Jones. And those guys were already established enough and shown when given a chance and healthy that they can do some things. And you look at all the receivers the Giants have too. So when you look at this and say, hey, this is all saying that you didn't even know your fourth round pick was going to turn out to be a stud and be just this offensive weapon that is the best offensive player on your team. You were looking at Brandon Cooks. You were looking at a breakout season, hopefully, for Nico Collins. You were putting all your hopes on the shoulders of a guy named Davis Mills that you got in the third round. And then you were trying to figure out who was going to play tight end and running back. But on the flip, the running back can play, and basically no one else can.
Yeah. What's interesting about like the running back being able to play, the Texans still around the league aren't great with the rushing offense because it takes more than one. Like, you got to have more than just the one dude. We all believe in Damian Pierce. He's the truth. But the rest of that room's lousy. 713-780-ESPN. Wins around the league for the worst teams in the NFL. It was a great NFL Sunday. Great NFL week if you go back to Thursday, too, for the Panthers. But are the Texans in a league of their own at the bottom? 713-780-3776, our HRMP listener line. We're on Twitch, twitch.tv/ESPN975. He's at Pac-Man Joel on Twitter. I'm at Jeremy Branham. Also, how about this Mills Mafia? Have they come to grips with reality? There's still a few hanger-oners. There's still a few that are on the island of Mills Mafia. When will reality smack them across the face? It already should have, but when will it? Skiller Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Talking sports with you, not at you. It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. Now from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
All right, we got people texting in. 713-780-ESPN, our HRP listener line. Lamont, Texans need a new coaching staff, and I say this while embracing the suck. IDGAF, you'll have to tell me what that means later. Kidding. About the minority implications at all.
I think
we all understand. The coaching staff thing is interesting to me. I'm not for firing Lovie Smith. This is probably a conversation we'll have later in the week. I think it's tough. I think that there's better coaches around the NFL than Lovie. I think if you look at only the 2022 coaching carousel, if you were to compare Lovie to every head coach hired around the NFL in 2022, Lovie would have a losing record head-to-head against the other coaches from just a would-you-rather perspective. In fact, like just off the top of my bald head, the only one that I can think of is Nathaniel Hackett that he would beat. Like everybody else, I would give the edge to the first-year head coach of the 2022 coaching carousel.
I don't disagree with you. I think that in just kind of roughly thinking about the whole league, Hackett's the first one that comes to everybody's mind because he needed a tutor after about 3 weeks, and everything that could go wrong looked like David Culley-esque, the way he was making mistakes, managing clock and time and challenges and plays and everything else. But the problem that they have problems going against them, too, so that when everybody says it's just so easy, just get rid of Lovie at the end of the year and get rid of Pep.
Right.
And I think it goes a lot deeper than just on the surface where people think it's just that easy, and there are other things that factor in. So, you know, It was, I don't, did you have the sound up when you listened to the game? Did you listen to the CBS?
Yeah.
Did you hear them talk about how Lovey has the locker room, how they might not, it might not show in the wins and losses, but this locker room loves Lovey and they play for him and they're, you know, he's a leader of them. And I'm going,
I don't disagree with
that.
Are
they though?
I don't really disagree with that. Outside of Brandon Cooks, I think that's fair. I think it's accurate. Like, who's not playing hard outside of Brandon Cooks? And even Brandon Cooks, I mean, you could make the case, and I'm not a Brandon Cooks supporter, but he was a pro yesterday. So I don't think Lovey's lost the locker room at all.
And we can talk about it. But, he had some missteps.
Okay, but like, Brandon Cooks, obviously an Easterby guy, obviously wanted out. But with the exception of Brandon Cooks, I think everybody's playing hard. Like, I mean, that's great. I mean, that's only going to get you
Mills
so far, though.
You're right, because the roster's only so deep. But Mills and Tunsil, and there's some other guys that sometimes you look at it and go, I mean, okay. I mean, how much are you really into this thing? Not Derek Carr-esque with his team, but there are still some guys. But no, look, I don't question the fact that you have to respect a guy like Lovey. You have respect because of his resume, things he's done, where he's been. But I think overall, it's a tougher decision because of the fact that it's not just about Lovey and being the commander of the ship. It's the guys he put in the other positions that are maybe the game has passed him by a little bit, or maybe they aren't ready for it at all, or he won't give up the reins to someone else so he can focus on being the commander of the ship. There's a lot of internal issues around Lovey, even if it's not Lovey specifically.
I believe that Lovey's a bottom third NFL head coach. I believe he's a bottom third NFL defensive coordinator. I feel Pep Hamilton's a bottom third NFL offensive coordinator. I say all of that while also saying that I can't evaluate Lovey Smith as a DC and Pep Hamilton as an OC with the roster that they have.
See,
they're playing chess with a bunch of pawns. No, they have no chance.
I've been arguing this for on the case of Pep Hamilton, you know, when everybody, including Davis Mills, was trying to blame coach and system. And it's like, why would you, how can you open up the playbook and do more when you know the guys on the field can't execute the play you're trying to run? So it's hard to even put it on Pep. Although a lot of people want to. And the one person they don't want to put it on is the one that doesn't want it either in Davis Mills. And that's because, again, all season long, we've heard about this is our guy. This is our guy. So you have some hard decisions to make. What I said when you and I were talking about this about a month or so ago, where it really is going to change things is if you truly do draft a franchise quarterback. Because now you don't want to go through what Sam Darnold went through and so many of these other young quarterbacks that went through multiple offensive coordinators and head coaches. And they never could really get comfortable. When you get your guy, you want him. Look what happened with Trevor Lawrence. He came in with a system and a coaching staff that was only there for a year and basically slowed him down. And then it was like crash course, you know, study sessions trying to figure out how to run a Doug Peterson offense. You don't want that for your kid coming in. You want him to have the guy that's going to be with him for a while and teach him the ropes.
Yeah, I think that's why the Texans are going to be in a hard spot. Because if they do draft a franchise quarterback, is it Pep Hamilton that you want guiding that franchise quarterback? Answer is probably not. And then secondly, if you have to like go out and find a really good offensive mind, probably doesn't want to be your OC. He probably wants to be your head coach.
He does.
So it's a really tricky situation.
It's kind of Joe Espada-esque. Well, you want the OC, and then after a year, we can, you know, groom you for the chair. I mean, there's no guarantees, right? So that's a tough one. And ideally, Jeremy, and I don't know how you feel about this because you know it'll never happen, but ideally, Pep Hamilton would be the best quarterback coach for a new quarterback coming into this league.
I would agree with that.
But I don't think Pep Hamilton's the right offensive coordinator for a new quarterback coming
into
this
league. And he's not taking a demotion.
Exactly. That's where I was going with that.
Yeah, I mean, they're in a tough spot if they do go that route. Now, they could wait on the quarterback, which I don't know how I feel about that. 713-780-ESPN, the HRMP listener line, 713-780-3776. Speaking of that quarterback position, there's still some in the Mills Mafia that exist that, oh, it's Pep Hamilton's fault. Oh, there's no skill position players to help Davis Mills. Oh, the offensive line's not protecting for Davis Mills, even though I think the offensive line has been middle of the road in the NFL this year. Kenyon Green had a rough one yesterday. But Lamont says, if any of y'all... if y'all know anyone who identifies as Mills Mafia, please let me know their names. It's 8 weeks running, and I need to win money.
Well, there's one guy with about six names. I know that, that he would qualify. But, yeah, there's plenty, because if you look at our Twitter feeds, I think we still get some of the residuals.
Yeah.
Wasn't
there somebody that called
anything
on Pauly's show earlier?
Yeah, this morning, driving in, there was a guy that said, all of you fans in Houston need to lay off Davis Mills and give him the three-year window that most young quarterbacks need and deserve. And he went back to last year under Tim Kelly and even went so far as to say it's really Pep and Lovey, because if Tim Kelly was still here, oh my goodness, I can't believe he even said that. But if Tim Kelly was still here with Davis Mills, things would be better. Would they? I would say no.
Now, Kelly, I think you have a conversation, whether it's Tim Kelly or not. I've seen it, too, on my timeline. I don't know why a quarterback needs 3 years. Like, a dude can play or he can't play. I know young quarterbacks are going to develop and, like, be decent someday, but I think you can have a pretty good idea. Like, you can have a pretty good idea if a dude's going to be capable or not to be a top 15 quarterback in the NFL relatively quick.
I'm out on Davis Mills, but can I offer one counterpoint?
Sure.
Geno Smith.
Yeah, Geno Smith would be a good answer.
Who saw that coming?
I mean, look,
and I saw the games. Brendan and I were actually, for a lot of reasons, we're texting during that game. We'll probably get to it at some point. But I'm watching it all season long. I've said to you every time we talked about bottom five teams, we talked about who the Texans had to be worried about. I put Seattle in that conversation. I had no faith in Geno Smith. Week to week, I go, well, this is the week he implodes. He made some throws in that game yesterday again that I was like, my goodness, it took a long time, but he can play a little bit.
He is an outlier, but I do actually think he is a good quarterback.
He's like Chauncey Billups. It takes him like 5 years when it should only take you like 6 months to show that you can play in the league. But when you find it, you can actually exist and play in the league.
Did Geno, like, he never really had a tremendous body of work, though. Like, he never had the opportunity of Davis Mills. I mean, I guess his first couple of years in New York, he had the opportunity to be the dude, and he wasn't very good in New York, and then he bounced around, he's been in the NFL for like 10 years, never as a starter, never started more than a few games until this year.
And I was going to say, whether it was really all good under one organization or not, that he had to make constant change, but he was constantly changing from his offensive coordinator to the playbook itself to the system and the coach. So he was constantly doing all these changes. He was highly regarded coming out, just never turned into anything, and now suddenly, given the chance, he looks pretty good.
We say Geno Smith, though, but do we think that Geno can lead the Seahawks to an NFC Championship game or Super Bowl? Because no. I don't. Yeah, I don't.
I agree.
I think the ceiling for Geno Smith is a playoff team. A playoff. Like, I like Geno Smith. I don't think Geno Smith is going to run the gauntlet of the postseason and head to a Super Bowl.
See, I feel that way about Kirk Cousins. I feel that way about Dak Prescott. I feel that way about, and everybody's going to kill me on this, but I'm sticking to it, Jalen Hurts, until he shows me he can beat good teams consistently and in the playoffs. Yeah, I mean, I may have eaten those words. That's fine. Wouldn't be the first, wouldn't be the last. But I got to see that before I believe that they can take you to the level you need to go to with a good football team.
We're not in Seattle, so I don't want to spend like all day on Geno Smith. I do think you guys are discounting what he's done so far this year.
No, I'm not.
No, this year has been great.
He's been really good.
How long did it take him to get there?
Geno Smith has, this year, if this is who he is, and it's a very small sample size to say that definitively, if this is who Geno Smith is, I absolutely think the Seahawks can win with him. And I'm talking about the NFC.
All right. Time will tell. 713-780-ESPN. Let's head out to the HRP listener line for Chris. Chris, you're in the Hive for the Killer Bees. What's up, Chris?
Hey.
Hey.
How's it going, gentlemen? Love the show. Just a real quick comment about Lovie and Pell. I know Lovie takes a lot of flack for the defense, and I know the biggest issue is the running game, or run defense. And I will say if it was the passing defense that it was just terrible, then it would be on Lovie. But I don't think we have the personnel to actually stop the run. And so whenever you become good on one dimensional for his defense and terrible on the other, then it looks worse than what it is. And for Pelp, just looking at some of those, sacks that Mills takes. I don't know who is in charge of providing the extra protection, but I think that's where it kind of falls at. And especially when it comes to those third and long. And when he dropped back, I just feel like he's going to get sacked.
Appreciate the call, Chris. Yeah, third and longs, you're susceptible to getting into those situations. I think the offensive line, for the most part, has been fine. I think they need help at center and right guard to take it to the next level, to be a top 12, top third of the NFL offensive line. And that's something that needs to be addressed in the offseason, whether it's through the draft or whether it's free agency. Those are two, I think, especially center, a glaring hole on the offensive line. And you need Kenyon Green to develop. Kenyon Green, relative to the rest of the NFL, has been below average as a left guard. Now, you hope that because of his potential, that he's going to turn into a top 10, top 15 left guard. You would hope so if you're going to draft him in the teens, but he hasn't played to that level this year. You shouldn't expect that. He's a rookie. You shouldn't expect a rookie to play to that level. I agree with what he said, though, and it goes back to what we've been saying the first 30 minutes. I don't think Lovie's the best NFL head coach, defensive coordinator. I don't think Pep Hamilton's the best offense coordinator. In fact, I think all of them are probably lower third in the NFL. That said, with this personnel, they don't have a chance.
Yeah, no, I agree with you. I think that, again, it's how you handle your top assets, your top players, right? And right now, you're handling your top player at the quarterback position. It's unfortunate for both guys because both guys are trying to make a resume while doing it for the first time. And you're going to be hindered, right? There's going to be obstacles and speed bumps because of the fact that, yeah, Pep's been a coordinator before, but now he's truly being put on center stage to see if he's not only going to be an offensive coordinator, but maybe more. But he's trying to do it with a guy that is using his first real opportunity to become a starter with a really bad football team around him to try and prove and show his wares too. And so both guys obviously have their own individual things that they're trying to do while trying to be on the same page right from the get-go. And it just isn't working. And so that's tough to watch.
713-780-ESPN, 713-780-3776. Time for Straight Trash Homie, presented by Vivia. All of the trash from the Texan Sunday that needs to be cleaned up, you can send us your own as well. 713-780-ESPN, the HRP listener line, 713-780-3776. Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Hey, before we go to the break, tell you about the good people at Doc Linville's office, because they are the best in the business at the NeoGraft procedure, in my opinion. They do it better than anybody else. It's the procedure you need to know about. As an ESPN listener, you can find out about it, and it's going to cost you nothing. What I mean by that is, if you are looking at trying to do something about your hair and you think it's a lost cause, you're thinning, you're balding, you're aging, and you just don't have the hair you once had, and you think your only alternatives are the sprays and creams and foams that just mask the problem, or shaving your head, there's another alternative. It's your own hair, put where you need it, and it's all done here in Houston at Doc Linville's office. And he can help you like he helped me and John and Jake and Fred and so many others. It is a fantastic procedure. For listeners of the station, you get a free consultation with Doc Linville and his staff. It normally costs $150. All you need to do is go to 975hair.com, set up an appointment. It's free. Ask all your questions. Figure out if it's right for you, from the recovery time of the procedure, when you'll see the full results. The thing that got me was the 95%+ success rate of the follicles moved. Over 95% stay and grow and get stronger and are going to be there for basically the duration of the rest of your life. Because genetically, where they take the hair, the sides and the back, it's always going to be there. Even guys that are bald always have, if they let their hair grow, hair on the sides and the back. That's why they take that hair. That's why that hair blends in so beautifully with the rest of your hair. And that's why it can absolutely take care of the problem. It did it for me, turning my 8-head back to a 4-head. Some people have the baboon's butt showing on the top and the back. You can fix that too. Check them out and see if it's right for you. 975hair.com. Go see my friend Doc Linville.
Clean up on all fives.
Now that this week's game is in the books, let's do some cleaning up.
I want you to clean it up.
I'm on trash bag.
Clean it up.
It's Straight Trash, homie, with the Killer Bees. Brought to you by Bavia Dumpster Rentals.
All right, Straight Trash, homie, presented by Vivia Dumpster Rentals, on a day where the Houston Texans failed to win a football game. That's pretty much been the trend the entire year for the Texans. 9 tries, they've won one. 1-7-1 to this point. Straight Trash, homie, presented by Vivia Dumpster Rentals. Blankers, would you like to do the honor of leading us off?
Sure. You know what, to me, and again, the obvious one I always leave because it's too obvious, to me, Brandon Cooks did some nice things. Brandon Cooks still did some things that creates distraction. Brandon Cooks gave some really bad body language and some gestures and things to Davis Mills when the ball wasn't where he wanted it or needed it to be. He obviously was stripped of his captainship. Yeah, he had some catches. Yeah, he had some yards. But at the same time, if you weigh it all, whether you're a captain or not, you're a veteran in this locker room that was kept around and extended for a lot of money because you're supposed to be a culture guy. Mm-hmm. And that's just bad culturally for a team that's really trying to find its way. And I had a problem with that. The camera caught it a couple times on underthrows, and he literally was kind of showing and voicing his frustration towards Davis Mills and the sideline. And then he wanted everybody to show him love when he actually made a catch that meant something. And it just doesn't work both ways like that.
I was preoccupied last week, so I didn't see the Brandon Cooks little interview that he gave in the locker room. Yeah. But I went back and I watched it this morning. He doesn't want to be a Texan. Nope. And like, he said he wants to win, but he re-signed to a team that won 4 games last year and knew they weren't going to get much better this year. He signed a 2-year extension with said team. It ain't about winning. Something upsets you that is different then than it is now. The glaring thing is Jack Easterby. Like, that is the glaring thing, because you were a Jack Easterby guy. Yeah, I don't like the fact that he played. I'll go a step further and saying it's Straight Trash, homie, that he was on the football field. Like, you act tough and you put up like this false threat. We're gonna strip that C off your jersey. Cool. Like, what does that even really mean? Like, that is an honor for a player that is leading his team. Whenever he doesn't want to be here and you strip the captain C off his jersey, he doesn't care. He doesn't care about your team anyways.
Jeremy, you know how you get to a guy? One of the only ways you get to a guy in the professional ranks. you get to his pocketbook.
Mm-hmm.
You suspend him, and we talked about it last week, and you take money out of his pocket, and it gets everybody's attention real quick. Taking a C off of a jersey, yeah, I mean, if you do it publicly or you anoint someone else and they try and figure out who you took it away from, maybe you get a little embarrassment, but you realize every 1st and 15th the check is the same.
Yeah.
When the check ain't the same, that's when it can make a difference.
Yeah, I don't think it matters to a guy who's literally does not want to be here. I thought I saw David Culley managing the game yesterday in the final minute, which is a dangerous place to be. You never want to go full David Culley. And look, we just spent the first 30 minutes about how you need to view the Houston Texans because they're not a very good football team and they're hopeless for the remainder of the year. Is that you need to have a big picture view. That said, I watched this terrible game management. I want to pull my hair out. The whole idea of getting the field goal on the last drive, I understand it. Like, you're down two possessions, get the field goal, make it a one-possession game, get the onside kick, have a chance. Like, I understand that. But in order to do that, you need time, right? You need as much time as you possibly can keep on the clock to take advantage of that. With the clock rolling on, like, second down, instead of just going to the line and killing the clock by throwing it down on the ground, by killing the clock, they ran the field goal unit onto the field. There was 40 seconds at the end of the play. And look, I understand there's receivers going deep. I understand it's not going to be quick, but it's going to be quicker than running the whole field goal unit on. They should have spiked the ball, then brought in Kyahmi Fairbairn to knock in the field goal to make it a one-possession game. There was 40 seconds when Davis Mills was sacked. It took 30 seconds to get the field goal unit operation on the field and kick that field goal. That was unacceptable by Lovie Smith.
Without question. And you know, the fact is that when you have to have some time left on the clock, whether you need a touchdown or a field goal, just to try and do whatever you need to do, whether it be have an arm strong enough to get it in the end zone or get in, you know, some kind of a range with a play or two. And that, you're right, it was completely inexcusable, and it's a shame because we just got done talking about Lovie Smith having the respect of the locker room. But if those things keep happening, people are going to start pointing fingers in his direction for a lot of other things directed towards what they saw a year ago in a guy that was completely incapable of handling the head coaching job.
Made absolutely zero sense. Get to the line, spike the ball, save time, then kick the field goal. Rushing it on, wasting 30 of the 40 seconds was silly.
I think offensive line play was not good yesterday. And Kenyon Green, that's one that you just want to throw the tape away because mm-hmm. He had penalties. He had multiple holding calls. He had one that had a touchdown called back because of it. He struggled mightily with, you know, some veteran guys on the defensive line that were basically, Lawrence was owning him. I mean, the fact that he was getting steamrolled and bum rushed and faked out was one thing, but the fact that he was holding on top of it and it actually cost you means that there is still plenty of work to do, regardless of whether you were a first-round pick or not.
Yeah, that one holding penalty, people are saying they took a touchdown off the board. I wouldn't go that far. He just took a sack off the board, right? Like, Davis Mills wasn't going to have time to throw that ball if Kenyon Green didn't commit the holding penalty. I agree with what you said. I would keep it up the middle, though. Like, Tunsil was fine. Like, he didn't really give up much. Titus Howard was fine. The middle three were the biggest issues. And like, going forward, again, having this big-picture view of the Houston Texans, those three have to get better. You're not going to replace Kenyon Green after drafting him number 15 in the draft. There has to be improvement there. You would expect there to be for a rookie. Now, the center position and the right guard position, mostly center. And look, we weren't expecting Quisenberry to be the starting center of this team. What in the world has happened to Justin Britt? That's got to be an issue that you need to upgrade. I think you can upgrade at right guard, too, even though Cann's not as big a problem as Quisenberry. I think he's below average when you look at the rest of the NFL. I want to kind of piggyback off of that a little bit. Rookies in general. Kenyon Green had a rough game. We spent some time there. No need to double down on that. Jalen Petrie, I thought, had a pretty poor game.
He's starting to really hit a wall.
Hitting a wall a bit. The over-aggression, missing a tackle, turned into a big play. And they even talked about it on the broadcast where Jalen Petrie was telling them in their little production meetings that he needs to play a little bit slower because he's a little bit over-aggressive. He's missing tackles. He's playing a little bit too fast. But this is what happens whenever you're a team that your best players are rookies. Because rookies are going to make mistakes. It is not, like, fair to think that you can have a team with your best players as rookies and that they're going to be perfect from day one. And they're never going to be perfect. But whenever you're in the league for a while, 3, 4, 5 years is really when you elevate your game. If you're relying on rookies to be your best players and the reasons you win on Sundays, you're not going to win many games because you don't win with rookies in the NFL. They're nice pieces, they're hope, but you ain't winning with it.
And you didn't mention the number one pick of this team this year. And we said all along, every single year, every single week, we're going to compare him to Sauce Gardner. right now there's no comparison.
No.
Because he's healthy, which was my biggest concern because they loved him so much and believed in his abilities. Healthy is one thing, but picking it up in the NFL and understanding it and doing it is another. And he's not there yet. And I saw him make a really nice open field tackle on Saquon Barkley on one play. But overall, I also saw him look on some plays like he just was still kind of lost and kind of dancing around in coverage. Where if you look at Sauce Gardner, he's killing the league right now. He's up there for defensive rookie of the year. So, again, to your point with rookies, you look at that and you say, yeah, well, you know what? The guy that was drafted right after him at the very same position because you were enamored with this guy looks like he's six steps ahead of him right now.
Yeah. The Stingley conversation bothers me, if I'm being completely honest. And maybe it's because I want to like Derek.
I do like Derek Stingley. I like him.
I want him to have a successful career, have a successful season. I like him. It's not want to like him. I do like him. I thought Sauce was better before the draft. I would have went Sauce over Stingley if I'm taking a cornerback at number three, which is an entirely different conversation. Mm-hmm. To defend and play devil's advocate, though, for Stingley, he's being used so much differently than how they're using Sauce. Like, this was our concern about drafting a corner. We were having the pre-draft conversation, Texan potentially drafting a corner at number three. Who cares if it was Sauce? Who cares if it was Stingley? That they're going to sit here and play a zone defense. Yep. They're going to sit here and play a Lovie Smith cover two, and you're basically restricting the number three pick of the NFL draft. You're putting a governor on said corner.
And he can get criticism if other guys that are supposed to be where they're supposed to be in that zone defense aren't where they're supposed to be. And I've seen that happen, too, to his defense.
We have no idea if Derek Stingley Jr. is going to be a good football player in the NFL or not because he can't showcase his talent. Like, it drives me nuts that you drafted a corner at number three, and I think Stingley's going to be really good. Is he going to be better than Sauce? I would say right now, with the information we currently have, probably not. But they're doing nothing to showcase his talent, and it drives me nuts.
Again, if you know you're not going anywhere, at least put him in a position to where he can get better by learning during that season, when losses can actually be beneficial. That's why I think that they should be using him in an entirely different way. Christian Harris, by the way, still love him.
Yeah.
Still looks good. Don't want him to be a Grugier Hill type that gets tackles for the sake of tackles because no one else can make tackles.
Yeah.
But he looks like he's a player, and of course we know Pierce can play. Before we get out of here, the last thing that I think is the way they handle the fourth quarter all season long has been a problem. It was again in the game yesterday. Fumble right off the bat in your own territory kind of turns the tide on everything. And that could be costly. But overall, the fourth quarter, and I get it, sometimes the defense is gassed too, but that just continues to be a problem where they don't have anything left in the tank, and they don't execute, and they get out-executed in the fourth quarter.
Yeah, the fourth quarter's been troublesome. Although the Damian Pierce fumble, I didn't hate it so much. Embrace the suck.
Oh, yeah.
He understood the mission. He understand what it's going to take
somebody
for this team
does
to get
anyway.
Good. 713-780-ESPN, Straight Trash Homie, presented by Vavia Dumpster Rentals. You want to throw some in there? You can. 713-780-3776. Does James Click deserve the same praise as Dusty Baker? Skiller Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Hey, you guys just heard Straight Trash Homie, brought to you by Vavia. Vavia, if you don't know, is exactly who you need when you've got something going on at your house, or maybe you've got a project going on and project managers, you know, you need a good place to get rid of your trash too. Well, you need to go to Vavia because Vavia is going to take care of you every step of the way and do the things you don't want to do, like take out the trash, get rid of the garbage, you know, eliminate the excess. When you're doing something from a renovation at your house or your business, or you're just cleaning out the attic and the basement or the garage, and you don't know what to do once you've cleaned it all out and it's laying in your yard and your driveway, just call Vavia because Vavia is going to take care of everything else. They have same-day delivery and pickup of 10-yard and 15-yard roll-off dumpsters. Small enough to fit in your driveway, attractive enough to keep away the HOA. And again, you make them know of your schedule. They'll drop it off in the morning, pick it up at night. No problem. Great curb appeal. Problem solved. That's what they do. Project managers for you, too. There's a reason why great businesses like Texas Custom Patios trust Vavia with their waste needs on all their projects. We use them for our ESPN golf tournament. Why? Because they're reliable and they do what they say they're going to do. You have anything going on, or maybe you're planning on having something going on where it's going to involve some trash and some things that need to be taken away, just go Vavia.com. GOVAVIA.com. On the website, you could also call them, but I encourage you to go to the website, talk to some people, set it up. You're going to be happy you did. It's govavia.com.
Your team's our priority. Join the conversation with the Killer Bees. Now coming to you live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
All right, James Click was fired over the last Friday, quite honestly. Fired, you can get me on the technicality, the nitpick. Well, he didn't have a contract. He wasn't picked. He got fired. He got let go. Jim Crane did not want James Click here anymore. He gave him the little token one-year contract to make it look like he was going to keep his World Series GM in fold and then make Click break up with Crane. That's kind of, it was really calculated by Jim Crane. Make sure that Click, and if Click picked up the one-year deal, okay, fine, pick up the one-year deal, and then we'll go get the guy that we want next year anyways. And look, there's a lot of things to talk about here, and you guys already talked about it last Friday with Gallant. The one thing that I would say, look, I don't mind that Crane moved on from Click. And I'm a pro-Click guy. I think Click's a pretty good general manager. I think he's top half, maybe even third in the league in terms of being a good GM. I like James Click. That said, I also view the GM position, the manager position, head coach position in NFL, things like that, as a position in my organization, just like I view point guard, shortstop, quarterback. If I can improve, you'd be crazy not to improve. I have faith that Jim Crane has a plan in place that's going to upgrade the GM position. Now, I don't think it's going to be this year. I think we're going to be waiting a year before his GM is in place. The thing that I think is unfair when it comes to Click, though, because look, Dusty Baker deserves tons of praise. He managed a World Series club. There's a lot of things that went right during the World Series that I think you can give credit to Dusty Baker for. The Jeremy Pena in the two spot, giving him confidence. The long leash on Yuli Gurriel, handling of the bullpen. Dusty was magnificent. Dusty was great. I think it is unfair that we don't give James Click the same praise that we give Dusty Baker. James Click came in here, and look, I know it was Luno's baby. He was the architect that built the whole thing up. I'm not sure that this team wins a World Series if it weren't for some of the critical moves that James Click made along the way as well.
So essentially, it's like John Gruden. John Gruden took over a Tony Dungy team that he had kind of orchestrated and put together, and Gruden kind of put the finishing touches on it, and he got a ton of credit for it. The difference here is Click hasn't got those flowers. I mean, for the most part, yeah, to your point, you know, Click is getting the blame of everything for a team that won the World Series. And the thing that I said to Paul on Friday, and I don't know where you stand on it, but I said, you know what? James Click is, because I agree with what you said about where he ranks in terms of general managers in this league, but I think James Click is best suited for a mid-market type team. A mid-market to maybe, you know, a little bigger than that type team, because he knows how to be somewhat aggressive, but he knows what his limitations are, and he never wants to overspend or overextend. Whereas your big market, big team general managers, obviously they have a slush fund behind them as well, but they take the big swings for the home runs, you know, and they are banging the walls at all times, whereas he's trying to do it the more conservative approach. He'd be perfect in a place like Cleveland, where he can keep a team winning, and he can keep evaluating talent, and he can keep bringing up young talent, but he's not going to be a guy that handles it well when you see the owners and the teams with the big money that want to spend and want to see bang for their buck.
Yeah, I think that's fair. I think that'd be a really good spot for James Click, a middle market team. The trouble that I have, like from a Jim Crane perspective, is like you would think that a GM with that mindset would easily fall in line with the philosophy that Crane has. Like, he's telling you to be more aggressive. He's telling you to spend more money. He's telling you, go sign Starling Marte. Go sign Liam Hendricks. Like, you would think that a GM's like, okay, this guy wants me to make the team better. He's spending his own money. Yeah, I will do that. And it's not like you're trading for those guys either. It's not like you were trading your top three prospects for Hendricks or Marte. Like, you might lose a compensation pick. I think Hendricks was compensation eligible. I think Marte, I don't really remember, but I'm pretty sure that they were. But those are like second round draft picks. Like, you can also build a pipeline through international free agents, other draft picks that you have. So it's surprising to me, from like the whole dilemma and them clashing heads, that Click just didn't fall in line with the marching orders of spend money. Like, that's not the worst thing in the world that an owner is telling you to do.
Yeah, it's difficult sometimes to understand why people, when given free rein, don't want to take it. I know that they were groomed a certain way, and you know they operate a certain way based on their past experiences. But when an organization and an owner opens up his wallet and says, go spend my money to make our baseball team better and make you look good in the process, I don't understand how that could be that difficult. I understand philosophically you don't like long-term big money deals, but then don't make them that long for that much big money. But there's a way to figure it out.
The one case that I could see is if he felt that there was a level of clashing going on that predated these opportunities, right, where he was told to go spend money and he didn't. Like, if he looked at it and said, I don't know that I'm going to be here long term. I don't want to make moves that don't represent who I am as a general manager. Like, it's like saying I don't want to put that on tape, right? Like, I want other owners to see how I do
but business. Nothing in the world screams louder at a team looking for a general manager than a general manager that won a World Series. If you could just go along with the plan and win a World Series, your resume opens doors that other guys trying to get to the next level don't get to.
But to Brennan's point, he didn't make those moves and he won a World Series.
Yeah.
So it kind of goes both ways there.
But if you felt like this was your long-term destination, it's weird. If you go, hey, I'm going to be an Astro for 30 years, it's a weird decision.
Yeah.
But if you felt that there was some conflict between you and ownership and you and Dusty, I can get why you'd be hesitant to make moves that don't reflect who you are.
But look, guys, here's the thing, because you're right. The one thing, too, is that everybody's looking. Look at the guys he's kind of molded after, the Theo Epsteins and the Stearns. And the guys under Theo's tree that have gotten bit. At a certain point, it's more than being a general manager. You want total control. You want an owner that stops meddling. You want a Cal McNair situation where you're not only the GM, but you are the president of baseball operations. That means you leave me to do my job, and I can hire my manager, and I can spend the money, and I can do whatever you hired me to do. And that's what they truly want to grow this into. It's not no longer just, I'm going to be the general manager of a successful baseball team for 15, 20 years.
Right.
I have higher aspirations, too.
Yeah, and I think that's fine. And look, I think I'm talking out of both sides of my mouth here. Like, I'm totally fine with Crane moving on from Click as the general manager of the Houston Astros while also thinking that Click is a good GM and should be getting some praise on his way out, too. And look, the Astros had their tweet, thank you for your contributions. Like, they handled it how they should handle it. Todd, the show on Twitch, I think Dusty actually made Click look better than he was. He put Montero in a position to succeed when he was just in a throw-in piece from the Graveman trade. But Click had to ask for Montero to be a throw-in piece.
Right.
Like, isn't that the dynamic of GM manager, GM coach, is that the GM goes out and gets the pieces and then lets the coach mold them into whatever they're going to mold them as. So, like, yeah, Dusty deserves praise for Montero turning into what Montero turned into, but you also have to give that praise
Dusty
to Click that
Montero
he's even in the organization.
Without Click, yeah, you're right. And here's the other thing, the thing that we're missing in all this, guys, and it works both ways. It's what you're talking about, Jeremy, with coach manager. It's also general manager to owner. The communication just has to be at a certain level, and it has to always be there. When it's not, that's why you get these pitfalls that lead us to where we are with James Click. It doesn't always work. I've seen it with owners, with management, in my experiences in professional sports. I've seen it with coaches and general managers. And the thing is, they might both be really good individually at what they do or what they've done, but if they aren't on the same page and talking on a consistent basis and there is some kind of a fallout or a gap that's not happening, it could be doomsday for one, if not both of them. And in this case, one got the accolades, the other one got the pink slip.
Yeah, see, Waka's saying he had to ask, but Montero was so bad, Seattle probably made us take him to get Graveman. There was two players that got traded in that trade that was a change of scenery type. One of them was Joe Smith for the Astros. The other one was Rafael Montero. So you have to give Click credit there. Click has made some good moves along the way. Did he make the splashy moves that Crane ordered him to do in hindsight? Apparently not, according to Michael Schwab, who, you know, talks a lot about the Astros on Twitter and put out a story of, like, where they were disagreeing. It was Liam Hendricks, Starling Marte. The Jake Myers dilemma was thrown in there as well. So, like, I understand moving on from Click. Click also deserves some praise. And I wanted to ask you this, too. Like, what is the lasting image, do you think, for James Click as the general manager of the Astros, a stint that lasted 3 years?
Look, I know everybody was trying to backtrack and see all of where his splashes and big moves were. I think people overlook the impact of a guy that made the ballsy decision to go with Jeremy Peña for the first time ever as the starting shortstop and replace a guy that was legendary in Astros fans lore with Carlos Correa. Not pay him the big dollars and not give him the big money and the long term is one thing, but to basically stick to your gut feeling that this kid was ready, that he was capable, and that he was going to do enough to at least, not that you're going to make you forget about Carlos Correa, but you were going to do enough to where you didn't think they made a huge mistake in not getting another veteran shortstop. I think that is the first thing that comes to my mind, and the way he resurrected a bullpen and did the little things that he did to it, both trade deadlines, made his teams better, regardless of how you look at him otherwise.
I have three for me that I will remember James Click as the Astro GM, and I think that we're going to see the ramifications of at least two of those long term. 713-780-ESPN, what is your lasting view of James Click as the Astro GM? 713-780-3776, the HRMP listener line. And we also have to get to the first move made by the mystery GM of the Houston Astros as well, Rafael. Rafael Montero. It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.